doing business in the state of Michigan and how Michigan has made it kind of tough on itself, especially not only to keep business here, but to attract new business. And I wondered how much power, how much influence you have in Congress versus what the governor has to make this a more business-friendly state?
Well, I mean, the governor can put forward a plan, and the legislature, too. It doesn't have to be the governor to get us more competitive. Certainly in the federal government, with all of the huge problems looming, the most of the cost that is added uncertainty to the employment picture here is from the federal government. All the proposals from cap and trade to the health care bill to looming tax increase in December that they're talking about, all of that's pretty devastating to business. And then, of course, here in the state, they raise taxes on the little guys for the big guys. And I'm for the big guys, too, by the way. You know, the big manufacturers want them here. But we have to stop in the government. And this is a policy that I think has killed this governor and is killing this president, that I like these certain businesses, but I don't like these. So I'm going to give a tax break to these kinds of businesses, but not these kinds of businesses. You know, we've got to get out of that kind of social engineering of what businesses I like. If we just start saying we are going to be incredibly competitive, let these businesses hire the people they want to hire and do the business that they want to do, we're all going to be better off for it. Watch this economy roar back. We think there's $2.3 trillion in private capital that these companies are holding, because if you looked at their balance sheets the first quarter of this year, their balance sheets looked pretty good. Not every business, but $2.3 trillion worth of businesses did. And the reason that they're not spending money, investing it in themselves or hiring people is they have no idea what their costs are going to be. So this whole notion that, gee, I like the business you're in, Tony. I'm going to give you a tax. I like the movie business. That's fun. So I'm going to give them incredible tax breaks. I'm going to raise the taxes on the little florist shop, on the little marketeer guy that runs the marketing magazine in my home county. They're going to get tax increases because they're not sexy businesses. Well, that's just wrong. And what it's doing, it's killing our economy. And yes, I like green technology, so they're going to get all the tax breaks. But everybody else that uses, you know, natural gas or coal-fired, we're going to punish them. Well, this is what you get. You get an economy that's broken, that can't get out of this recession, and you get high deficit spending. And we've got to shake ourselves out of it.
Let's talk about cap and trade. There's a lot of fear out there about it. There's two sides to that story. And it seems to me from the guests that we have talked to, including you, that there's one side of the story that says it's going to hurt the economy, especially when you talk about gas prices. And there's another side, the government side, that says it's going to be a good thing. What's your perspective on cap and trade?
I think cap and trade is a disaster. And if you're a manufacturing state like Michigan, forget it. There are provisions in there that any new clean tech, I mean, one of the things that was allowed, just to give you one example. First of all, let me back up. Your gasoline prices will go up. Your natural gas prices go up. If you have coal fire plants, which we have here in Michigan, even though we're working to improve their emissions and they have done a phenomenal job at it, all of your electric bills are going up. Everything you do, touch, and eat gets more expensive, including your commute to work. And I don't know if they've checked out, but we're hurting here in the state of Michigan. So you add cost to the average family's budget. People are going to lose their homes. They're going to have a tough time making their bills meet. So that alone, I think, is the wrong idea. Secondly, you've got provisions in there. I mean, look, this is the one that drove me crazy. And I never understood why the unions got back behind this bill. There is a provision in there where if we have a new piece of clean technology, that the government is going to give it to the Chinese and the Indians. So one of the reasons that we normally are competitive against the rest of the world is because we innovate better and faster. Well, there's a provision in there. If you create this new great new technology to burn stuff cleaner, we're just going to give it to the Chinese so that they can do it too. Well, you've just given away our ability to compete. And that's what the bill itself is awful. And it absolutely undermines everything we used to believe in America, that if we're going to do it better and quicker and faster, and we will compete with the Chinese, absolutely. And we will compete with the Indians, absolutely. But we have to compete. There's no artificial game in that you can put in. And it just really frustrates me that they said, we're going to clean up the environment by making you pay $7 a gallon for gasoline. You know, we had this social contract in America that you could go out and buy a house anywhere you wanted, and you could send your kids to school anywhere you wanted, and by the way, you can commute to work. And we've created this whole great middle class, the world's largest economy on this notion that you get to make those choices. And what the government said with this bill is, no, I'm going to make these choices for you. You should be living within the city limits of X or Y or Z, and if you don't, I'm going to punish you for it. Really? What am I going to do with my house that's upside down even though I have a 35-mile commute, Mr. Government official? What am I going to do? Are you going to buy my house for me so that I can move back down? I mean, this social engineering has to stop. We can solve these problems, and we can solve them pretty quickly if we allow the greatest innovation country in the world to do what it has always done. And all of these bills are very antithesis to that.
Is cap and trade going to move forward?
Well, it passed the House of Representatives. It looks they keep saying they're going to bring it back, and they're going to try to pass it in the lame duck. I think that would be awful, terrible. Matter of fact, the health care bill was bad. A lot of the folks, and I'll tell you why cap and trade is bad, is it will just shove jobs over to China and India. We manufacture things. Remember, we just had this conversation about manufacturing. Those jobs are gone. They're not coming back if we do this.
Let's talk about it. I just want to get your take on the EPA deciding not to ban or regulate lead bullets. What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, they have been so aggressive on everything else. I'm sure their studies are good. I like the fact when ranges go away from lead bullets, it doesn't mean they have to mandate it. I think most people want to get there because when you do it at a shooting range, they have pretty tough regulations to live up to make sure that lead doesn't get in groundwater and other things. So they're already living under the weight of those regulations. So I'm glad that EPA didn't stick their nose in it further by just banning them. I'm not sure that would be appropriate.
I had an email here. It's kind of a bizarre email because all it said was Mike Rogers supports TARPs.
No, I opposed TARP.
Yeah. Well, according to looking at your record, yeah, that is true.
Absolutely.
Talk about those. Why do you oppose them?
Well, the TARP fund was designed to bail out Wall Street for schemes that they put together to make a lot of money on bad loans. Now, here was the problem. The government decided that people ought to be able to buy homes, and so that people who couldn't afford to buy homes, that was wrong. So they put in a provision that a certain percentage of loans had to be given to people who couldn't even pay back the loan. Okay, that's how this whole thing got started. And so what happened was Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, two very big companies that are quasi-government agencies, said, you know, we're making money by backing up these loans. And so if 3 or 4 or 5% is good, why don't we raise this to 10 or 11 or 12%? And it kicked off this era of, if you could fog up a mirror, you're going to get a loan. And matter of fact, if you want 100%, we'll give you 120% of the value of the house. Let's go. And so Wall Street put these things called collateral debt obligations together. And they said, don't worry about it, everybody. We're smarter than everyone else, and this thing will be great. And so what they were doing is moving all of these loans that they knew the probability of getting paid back wasn't very good, and they'd bunch them up together, and then they'd sell them in these, they call them tranches, $100 million in these tranches, and they'd sell them, and they'd take just a fraction of a percent on each deal. Well, what happened was it was musical chairs. Somebody was going to get stuck with that thing. So they just kept selling these things around, and finally it caught up. You know, there's no such thing as a free lunch, and this was the example. And so what they did is they came to Washington and said, oh my gosh, we're too big to fail. We can't fail. And I absolutely opposed it. I spoke against it. I voted against TARP 1 and TARP 2. I absolutely think that was the wrong decision.
Should there be a mosque at the site of 9/11?
I don't believe there should be. Listen, they have the right under the United States Constitution. It's their land if they want to build it, and it doesn't. It fits all their local ordinances. But I think if they truly want, and they say at least here that they're trying to be, you know, the moderate Muslims of the area and try to promote moderate Islam, then you don't do it by poking people in the eye. And exactly what they did is being completely insensitive. You know, we have words that are not illegal to use in this country, but because we've said they are pretty harmful, that we have joined together collectively to say we're not going to use these words. And rightly so, because of the connotations that it has. So we've done this, and it's not illegal. You can use any one of those words that you want on the street corner. You can go to town if that's what you want to do. But you know what? We have decided as a culture that there are just some things that are not appropriate. And why they would go ahead and build this, poking those folks in the eye, I think it's wrong. And the imam, when you track what he says overseas versus what he says here, are two very different things. And I think Islam has to deal with this notion that you can be in the United States and say, no, I'm for moderate Islam, and then go back to the Arabian Peninsula and preach hate and discontent. They have got to get a handle on that if we're going to get this thing fixed.
Let's talk about China. They own a lot of our debt. They have a very unfair, or at least unfair the way the United States looks at it, trade agreement. They are apparently trying to spy on us and learn our secrets. They are trying to hack into very important United States companies and government entities. Talk about your feelings and thoughts on China.
Yeah, I have. I introduced a bill a few years back, and people thought I was crazy. It's called currency manipulation. And it called for countervailing duties if we can find out and determine, and they are, by the way, illegally keeping the value of their money lower than ours in the United States. And people go, well, what does that mean to me? Well, it means if we have a car that we're going to sell you for $100, cost $100 to produce, the Chinese would say, well, because the value of our currency, they could produce that same car for $60 at the end. Some people think it's 40%. Some people think it's 18%. So I always take that $40. That means no wonder it's cheaper and looks more interesting to us. It's a $60 value versus $100 value. And then they bring it here in the country and absolutely kill our ability to compete. When you borrow as much money, now China has just surpassed Japan as our largest debt holder. Half of the debt, remember what I just talked about, $1.5 trillion just this year we've added to it, just this year. Well, they own about half of it now, which means it's pretty tough for us to go overseas and say, you got to stop cheating on your currency and you have to stop subsidizing your businesses. It's not trade. If a business can't make it, they got to go away, those kind of things. Well, guess what? It's pretty tough for us to go over there and do that when they own half the money. You can't slap them and say, oh, by the way, can I borrow another 10 bucks? Doesn't work. And that's exactly the position we put ourselves in. And I think it's wrong. I think this we ought to be very tough on the China. We should not be afraid to compete against them, but it has to be fair. We don't actually have a trade agreement with China. They have something called most favored trade status, which in reality doesn't mean a whole lot. There is no trade agreement, but we allow them to participate in world trade. A lot of our companies use their illegally subsidized prices to compete. And I think it's wrong. And you know, remember, if you're going to be in business in China, you have to have a government partner, not a government permit, a government partner. So this has a very real consequence to a small tool and die shop in Williamston, Michigan, trying to compete with a illegally subsidized. The value of their currency is lower. It makes it almost impossible for them to compete against a Chinese company. Everyone argues, oh, it's just the wages. No, it's all these other things that they've done. If it were straight up competition, we would beat them every single time. But now we can't quite get this administration to say it's currency manipulation. And why? Because they're borrowing so much money from them.
So is there going to be a point where we just really start focusing on the budget deficit?
I hope so. The good news was Democrats announced that, oh, they're going to start looking at budget cuts, which is great. I mean, that tells me maybe they're listening at these town hall meetings. Mm-hmm. People are really upset. And all of this spending, by the way, didn't help. Matter of fact, the economy got worse with all of this. Everyone said, oh, they got to spend money in the government and make it work. It got worse after we went into this kind of deficit and debt this fast.
All right. Before we let you go, anything else new and newsy that you're going to be working on?
Well, when we go back, obviously, we'll focus on the president's plan. And one of the things that I'm proposing, if we want to do infrastructure, right now we send all this money to Washington of the 19 cents that you pay at the pump for federal gas tax. You send it all to Washington, and they fight over it, and then we don't get it all back. My argument is we should only take at the federal level the money that we need for federal interstate highway systems, and then let the state keep all the rest. It would be a huge boon for Michigan. You want to talk about construction jobs in your local neighborhood, that's how you get it done. You don't create a new fund and a new program. I think my bill and my effort would be widely supported here, and I think it's the right thing to do.
All right, Congressman, appreciate your time. Look forward to talking with you again.
Yeah.
Tony, thanks
Tony.
For-